Content warning. Please be advised that today's Magis podcast will mention themes of trauma and harassment that might be triggering for the listening audience. Please feel free to give yourself a moment before tuning in. I'm your host, Bits, your resident casual Taylor Swift fan, and I'm joined by a Taylor Swift expert and connoisseur.
Ooh, not the expert connoisseur. What's up, guys? It's me, Roby.
Welcome back to Magis Radio. Today, in support of our friends from ACOM's Communicate, we are going over part two, identifying and acknowledging traumatic experiences while dissecting the ever-prolific pop star, Taylor Swift, and her song All Too Well.
Definitely. And I think, you know what, for the audience, for those who's listening who kind of really don't know Taylor Swift, if you live under a rock and you don't know her art, she did release a 10-minute version of All Too Well. Now, a bit of context for everyone. I'm sure Bits, we know this, but for those who don't know, the queen herself, Miss Taylor, released a Taylor's version of the album Red last year, and All Too Well got a little reimagining. So originally the song had, I think, around 3 to 4 minutes, but in her Taylor's version, she actually released her 10-minute version. Now, this song is kind of a little insight to her past relationship with Jake Gyllenhaal, which only lasted for around 3 months, if I'm not mistaken. And at the time they were dating, I think Taylor was just 20 and Jake was 29. So they broke up around 21 and Taylor was 21 and then Jake was 30. And it was reported that Jake actually dumped Miss Taylor right before New Year's in 2010. Now, I don't know about you guys, but that is just not a good move.
God, it's mean.
It is mean.
A Taylor Swift song.
Exactly, exactly. And you know what? We know Miss Taylor herself. She went through the process of kind of figuring out what to do in that relationship. And she made a 10-minute version of the song that we all grew to love ever since its release in November. And I think, you know, a lot of people actually compared this to Taylor's past relationship when she was 19 and she dated John Mayer, who was, I think, around 32 at the time they were dating. Ooh. And, you know, that's what started Dear John, one of her most iconic songs as well. And I think we kind of really, just to level everything off, you know, talking about Taylor's relationship, you kind of really see how much she was kind of really taken advantage of because of the age imbalance and the power dynamics in the relationship. I mean, what do you think, Bits?
Definitely. For me, personally, just an opinion on, like, wide age gaps in relationships. You know, like, a wide age gap isn't inherently bad, diba? Like, a 19-year-old dating a 28-year-old. It's like a different story from a 30-year-old dating a 40-year-old. What makes me really uncomfy, though, is when one of the people in the relationship is still a teen or still coming of age. Because, you know, they're not exactly in the same place in life as you.
Yes.
They probably don't have the same, like, maturity or, like, you know, the same capacity to deal with, like, problems. So there really is, like, as you said, an imbalance, like a weird power dynamic already between the two. And I don't know, it makes me really uncomfortable to think that there are people out there who are much older and want to go for, like, super young significant other, because, like, even now, me, like, as a 22-year-old, I don't ever see myself, like, hanging out with an 18-year-old for fun.
Yeah,
because I know that an 18-year-old is in, like, a totally, like, different place in life.
Uh-huh.
For me, like, on a totally different level of maturity. So, like, I don't know why a 30-year-old would want to hang out with, like, a 19-year-old or, like, an 18-year-old.
Exactly. That is so true. Super true. And I think, I mean, right now, I'm 21, and there's already a huge difference between me and someone who's 18.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a few years, I get it, but the difference of maturity, the difference of experiences, and I think at 18, kasi, like, quoting Miss Taylor, you think you know everything at 18, but nothing at 22. And at that age, when you're 18, 19, you kind of really feel na you know everything, na you're so mature, you're ready for all these mature things, but it's totally different when you grow older and you experience a lot more things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right now, I agree with what you said, definitely, like, I would not be seen, but, like, it would be totally different hanging out with someone who's 18.
Yeah.
Because of the difference. And Jake here was 30. I don't know about you, but I'm currently raising a red flag over here.
Me too. Yeah. For sure.
And I think with that, you know, the song, it kind of starts off with the guitar effects. And you kind of already feel the somber mood. And it's kind of as if you're looking it through a past life, you know? Mm-hmm. And the song itself, you kind of get an idea of what's happening between the relationship in one of the verses. And this, the verse is, the photo album on the counter, your cheeks were turning red. You used to be a little kid with glasses in a twin-size bed. Your mother's telling stories about you on the t-ball team. You taught me about your past, thinking your future was me. And then it kind of goes on to say, and I'm not going to sing this, but this is one of her, I think, her best lyrics. You were tossing me the car keys, fuck the patriarchy, keychain on the ground, and we were always skipping town. And then it goes on to say, he goes on to say it's love. You never called it what it was. And I think Miss Taylor herself, really, she spoke in between the lyrics. You kind of really just feel everything that she's feeling. I mean, with Jake kind of throwing the car keys, I don't know if you guys watched the music video, but when we saw that scene, and we kind of all just really felt like shit's going down.
I was scared.
It's about to happen. You kind of felt, it was like, this is it. We're getting the truth. We're getting what actually happened in the relationship.
Yeah.
And we kind of see their relationship, you know, through a different lens that we've never really heard before. And if you guys didn't know, the 10-minute version, it happened because I think Mama Taylor, Mama Swift was talking about it. She recorded it when Taylor was just rapping and singing all these things when she was rehearsing for a concert right after they broke up. So this was really Taylor unhinged, pure, innocent, just talking about whatever she was feeling. And, you know, we kind of really see, again, the power imbalance between their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that really shows just how much age plays a part in relationships, right? I mean, what do you think about that, Bits?
Yeah, just to build on what you were saying about, like, how we actually saw what happened in the relationship and how, like, the 10-minute version was so, like, detailed and raw. And, like, I really got that, like, when I was reviewing the video of, like, to prepare for this podcast, like, I realized that as a casual Taylor Swift fan, I'm not really that familiar with her. And, like, I remember, like, you know, hearing people comment, like, oh, Taylor Swift, she's such a serial dater. Seeing it now, like, unfold on video and, like, how, like, in her lyrics also, this woman isn't a serial dater. She was, like, young and, you know, she was, like, experiencing stuff and she was going through it, like, this is a real person. Like, why are you all accusing her of being a serial dater? That's
exactly. So weird. And she's just, what, at this age, she's like 19, 20, 21. Oh, and imagine, like, being so young as a teenager, growing into that and kind of hearing the media talk all this shit about you, saying that you're this and this. And I guess, you know, that's a huge thing that she addressed in her reputation. That there was really this huge imbalance in media itself, right? But I think dialing in on kind of All Too Well and the whole relationship aspect of it, you kind of really see the whole gaslighting aspect of the relationship. And it kind of really shows the abuse that a younger person goes through in this kind of relationship. And they're really so vulnerable to it. And, you know, kind of in the song itself, she really believed, like, Taylor believed this was love. Like, what she was experiencing, what she was going through with Jake, it was all love. But all the time, she was kind of really met with denial. And just, you know, to give everyone context, the full definition of gaslighting is that there's a manipulation of the reality of the other person. And you kind of really see that play out in the music video if you really just sit down and analyze it. And we actually have a quote for, a quote from Robert Stern, a counselor, and they go on to mention that gaslighting is an interpersonal relationship that often develops or builds on an existing power dynamic. And in this case, it's the obviously huge age gap. And it can, you know, gaslighting can happen in any kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. And it just really shows the unequal power dynamic. And it kind of just, you know, I mean, it kind of spotlights Taylor Swift's younger age compared to Jake.
Yeah, that's really true. And like, just to build on what you said about gaslighting being something that can happen to anyone, like for me, like I live in a house where everyone is like the type of person who wants to be right. So gaslighting is like pretty hard to like suss out. Like, you don't know the line between, oh, someone just wants to win an argument, or if someone's like gaslighting you.
Yeah.
So like,
that's
yeah.
Difficult.
So it's really hard. Like, it's a hard thing to suss out now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So true to form, Taylor casted Sadie Sink, 19 years old, and Dylan O'Brien, who was 30 years old, for the short film. And apparently, Taylor set up everything, like the script, the treatment, and the whole ensemble. And they informed her actors, which tells us how important they both are in telling the story. And so about this, we have a quote from Taylor, and she says, "I wanted to have everything ready. Like, this is my DP. This is who we are using for set design. This is who we are using for editing. This is who we are using for like the producer. I wanted them to know all of the information so they could make a choice and sent them the song." That was Taylor talking about her process with Sadie and Dylan O'Brien. And the video contains a lot of visual cues that lets us peek at the problem, at the power imbalance. Like, for example, in that scene at like the dinner, when Sadie's trying to hold Dylan's hand and he drops it, and Dylan literally like threw the car keys, like very frustrated. And there's the argument after the party, which in that scene, like in the 10-minute short film, she stopped the music for a few moments of dialogue. Like, she actually gave that scene dialogue. Like, it couldn't just be, you know, acting happening with the song in the background. And the two characters argued while Sadie was cleaning the party's mess. And Sadie was complaining about how Dylan didn't make her feel comfortable while they were, like, all talking and, like, partying with, you know, Dylan's friends. And he dropped her hand, like, you know, right in front of everyone.
He did drop her hand. Yeah. He did drop her hand. He obviously did.
I honestly think he did. And to that, like, you know, Dylan responds, "I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't drop your hand. These are my friends and we're catching up." So like, but we all saw it on video. It happened.
I mean, okay, the people who say that he didn't drop her hand are men. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, yeah.
No, but it's obvious that he did drop her hand. And, you know, he kind of really, you kind of see it, like, how he gaslights her so well that she kind of thinks she's delusional, you know?
Yeah.
You kind of feel that?
Yeah.
And I think to kind of just add it all in, you kind of really see how the gaslighting works on her in that scene, because, you know, right after they argue, they kind of made up as well. You know, they were okay and they were laughing and they were dancing. And you kind of really see just how much he gaslit her to a point that, yeah, it's fine. I'll push it under the rug. Maybe he did drop my hand, you know. He's with his friends. He's catching up. They haven't seen each other for a long time, so I'll let it go. He probably didn't mean it, but that's where it obviously starts. It's that little thing that kind of sparks into this huge thing, and, you know, it just adds on and adds on.
That's so true.
It's way.
Like, with little lies like that, I mean, it's like, it feels like such a small thing, but, like, if someone's comfortable enough to, like, lie, to, like, you know, to convince you of something so small like this, like, what's gonna stop them from lying to, like, you know, manipulate you into believing other, like, more intense things, you know? Yeah. Like, it was like a quote unquote small thing, like dropping her hand. But like later on, it's going to be like other arguments. And then you're going to call back to like, oh, remember that time when you thought like I dropped your hand when I actually didn't? You're crazy. You're literally always making things up. Oh. Like, things like that happen.
Bestie, we're unpacking trauma here. Exactly. Exactly. It's the little things like that that kind of really add up, and they try to make it seem like you're the crazy one. Oh, it's just a fucking hand. But no, it's not. It's so much bigger than that.
So that also, there's another song by Taylor from Red. It's The Moment I Knew, which alludes to another party. And this is also a song Taylor allegedly wrote from her experiences with Jake Gyllenhaal. And allegedly, this was the story of how Jake dumped Taylor on her 21st birthday. So some of the lyrics goes, and it was like slow motion, standing there in my party dress in red lipstick with no one to impress, and they're all laughing as I'm looking around the room, but there was one thing missing, and that moment was the moment I knew.
I definitely do agree that The Moment I Knew is about Jake, because from the music video itself, you could also see the scene play out when she was kind of just in a museum or in an art gallery, kind of. She was alone, and you know, Taylor Swift at that time, she was already big, but there was no one talking to her, and she just felt so alone, and you kind of really see it in the film as well. So I definitely do agree that this song is also about Jake and their, you know, their relationship, kind of.
Yeah, definitely. And oh, we get a confirmation of that in the chorus with another bit of lyric only added to the 10-minute version of All Too Well. So yeah, the abuse here is clear in their wide age gap, allowing for these quote-unquote little things, these little transgressions, to happen easily. And in the end, the 30-year-old actor denied Taylor. It could be love, their relationship, but there was no admittance.
Yes, definitely no admittance there on his end. And I think you kind of, just to add it in a little bit, you kind of really see how their dynamic changes throughout the scene and how it plays out in the short film. And, you know, the huge line as well, you kept me like a secret, but I kept you like an oath. I think that encapsulates a lot of their relationship. And,
that's cool.
You know, it just really shows just how much the power dynamics is with relationships with huge age gaps like this one. And can I just say, this is just a very quick side comment, but I can't believe during that time we thought it was okay. Like, I distinctly remember the time they were dating, and I thought it was fine. And media also thought it was fine. Because they were pushing Taylor to be this kind of serial dater, but we kind of really didn't recognize the fact that she was just 19 and this guy was 30.
30, a whole ass man. Oh my god.
A whole ass man. And we never thought of it that way. We never thought that the power imbalance or that the age dynamic was a huge thing. But it is, thinking about it now. She was 19. Yeah. How could she have known this whole thing, right?
I super realized that also, like, watching the video and, like, how uncomfortable I got watching, like, Sadie Sink and Dylan O'Brien. Like, two different eras. I'm like, she's from Stranger Things. That's a child.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people also kind of felt that way. They were like, why are you casting Sadie and Dylan? Their age gap is huge.
But that's exactly it.
Exactly. The fact that we're recognizing that now, and we didn't recognize it when it happened to Taylor, it's huge. Because
it's insane.
That's their age. Sadie and Dylan's age gap was their age gap when they were dating. So
it really was.
Kind of messed up. But Taylor's smart for that. Taylor is a genius for casting those two. And
definitely,
they did exceptionally well.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, but to kind of just, you know, close this whole segment off a little bit, we kind of really talked about a lot of heavy things that, you know, you kind of really need to settle down and sit to take all in. You know, we kind of really had to analyze Taylor's perspective and her relationship with this huge age gap. And in a little bit, we'll be talking about, you know, the abuse and the trauma that kind of goes with a huge kind of problem in an age, in a huge age difference relationship yeah. like this.
Right. So as we mentioned earlier, we will be diving into a heavier topic now. We'll be talking about identifying and acknowledging abuse and trauma. And I guess what we can learn from Taylor Swift's All Too Well in that regard. So some abuse and trauma victims actually take some time to process and remember what has happened to them. Like even with a powerful woman, someone like Taylor Swift, we can also see how trauma takes time to process. Like Red was released in 2012, while Red Taylor's version was released in 2021, and that's like almost 9 years apart. And in a sense, the added lyrics in the 10-minute version of All Too Well are like a processing and like expression of emotional events with more clarity, mm-hmm. right? And I guess the tough part is that victims may delay their response for years and even deny their trauma too. So for a lot of people with delayed responses to trauma, they can experience things like persistent fatigue, sleep disorders, nightmares, fear of reoccurrence, anxiety focused on flashbacks, depression, and avoidance of emotions, sensations, or activities that are associated with the trauma, like even remotely. So some victims can like literally deny their trauma for years. And I guess for me, like just speaking from personal experience, I'm just gonna dive into like my own mm-hmm. experience of, you know, delayed trauma processing. So I was in grade 12, right? And yeah. I was in grade 12, and I think it was 2017 or 2018, and a guy classmate of mine was like joking around with me and another friend. Like, we were in our classroom during break time. And like, long story short, my classmate actually ended up touching me down there with a water bottle as a joke, right? Like, as a joke. And no, obviously, it's not a funny joke.
Not, yeah.
It's freaking weird. And so, obviously, like, I was super shocked. And I walked away and I cried a little. But like, throughout the day, weirdly, like, I was like convincing myself that, you know, it was an honest mistake. They were just joking around.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And like, I really didn't want to make a big deal out of it. And that classmate of mine was like my really good friend too. And like, he actually still is, like, even after all that.
Uh-huh.
So like, I just swept it under the rug. I was like, let bygones be bygones. And I never talked about it to anyone. And it wasn't until like the Iha Ako movement, like literally like in 2020, 2 years after it happened, that I realized that what I experienced back there was actually like abuse. Like, I was yes. like, diba? Like, I, and then when at the time that I realized it, I was like crying like super uncontrollably, and then like my heart was beating so fast, and like it was a delayed response, like mm-hmm. literally 2 years after it happened. And like, even though I'm still friends with the aggressor, diba, it like made me feel really disgusting and unsafe. Yeah, and no, definitely. Yeah, when I realized that it happened. And yeah, I guess that was my experience of just having like a delayed mm-hmm. trauma response. And I'm kind of glad that at least, like, even though it was delayed, I was able to
process that emotion,
acknowledge and process definitely. That it happened, even like yeah. 2 years down the line.
Yeah, I think
so, yeah.
It's really something that, you know, it's normal, I think, with like mm-hmm. kind of with the processing trauma itself. I mean, I've also had an experience wherein I kind of denied my trauma, and mm. I didn't realize it was traumatic until I think it was like 8 or 7 years later. Uh-oh. So it was something that I quite realized this pandemic, but it's heavy when you kind of really understand, yes, that was traumatic and I have to process that emotions now, but there's also a sense of kind of acknowledgement now. I am processing it, and it's a delayed response, but it's something I'm going through that I have to go through to be a better person and to kind of really understand what I went through, kind of, yeah.
That's so true. So, yeah, like, it can be like that. It can be like a delayed response can really take, like, time anywhere, like, from 2 years, like me, or, like, for you, it was 7. years, right? But yeah, it's like a really important step to take, as you said. Like no matter how far it is down the line. So yeah, that's like, so for some people the response to trauma can be delayed, but for others it can be pretty immediate. Like trauma denial can be an immediate reaction, and it can be helpful in the short term. Like it allows the trauma survivor to stand up and get back on their feet. According to Sabina Morrow, a psychologist in Yardley, Pennsylvania, and they say trauma denial is a way to put distance between you and an overwhelming experience. So to add, it can be one of the many ways your brain tries to adapt and mitigate a reality collapse or a system overload, which can often happen after a traumatic event. So there are multitudes of other emotional and mental responses attributed to a traumatic event, and this is the more prevailing reaction in Taylor Swift's story. So some immediate physical responses to trauma may include, one, there's nausea and or gastrointestinal distress, and there's, two, sweating or shivering, three, faintness, four, muscle tremors or uncontrollable shaking, five, elevated heartbeat, respiration, and blood pressure. Six, extreme fatigue or exhaustion. Seven, greater startle responses. And eight, depersonalization. And a member of our program's team actually shared a story with us where back in grade 11, most of their classmates, including them, we're all entering a big university for the first time. They were all excited. And they were walking towards Shakey's for lunch when a friend that they were chatting with, who was a woman, got catcalled. And even though our program's member was only a witness to this, they felt the immediate, they themselves felt the immediate responses. Like they got cold feet and started sweating. And also like they didn't have time to defend their friend. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what our program's member to share.
With situations like this, it's definitely, you kind of also go through your fight or flight instincts, right? I think definitely. If you're going through something and you have this immediate reaction, you kind of either are just frozen in place or you kind of feel the instinct to kind of fight something. And, you know, as what our program's friend said, that they, you know, they didn't have time to defend their friend, which is the kind of fight aspect to it. And I think definitely with, you know, a kind of experiencing trauma and acknowledging trauma, especially right after it happens to you, I don't know, I think mostly for me, most of the time I get kind of like an out-of-body experience where I kind of am familiar with what's going on, but it's just, it doesn't feel real, especially when you're going and you're processing what just happened to you. And that, you know, that happens for a lot of things actually. And you know, for most people, they can either go through this immediately, this reaction, or they take time, and it's what we mentioned, what we talked about earlier. And I think with regards to healing and taking that time to heal for yourself, we learn to process through it and we learn to heal in a way that we could. And, you know, beyond the definition of, you know, healing and trauma, there's a conversation that the word trauma and how we use that word currently, there's a people and experts are talking about it, and they said that they are kind of afraid that, you know, trauma, the word trauma is starting to lose its meaning because we use it too much. And professionally, the definition of that term is actual or threatened death, serious injury or sexual violence, either as a victim or as a witness. But that's kind of something that we have to talk about in a next episode, that we'll go through on kind of the aftermath on a heavy topic, on a heavy event for an individual. But for kind of the conclusion to this episode, really wanted to kind of stress and talk about the importance of processing your emotions and processing your trauma in your own timeline. So these can be manifested in different ways. It's either, you know, talking to a friend, someone you really trust and you can confide in, that some for that someone who understands you and what you're going through, you could talk to them. or you could also talk to a professional. You can seek help from a counselor, a parent, a guidance person that you could process your emotions with. But I think the first step is kind of really acknowledging that you kind of really first have to identify the trauma that happened to you, and you have to acknowledge that it did happen. But I think the process of healing goes through when you find the clarity to really understand why it happened, how it happened, and how you're going to become a better person out of that experience. And the most important thing is to kind of, you know, try to stop and just think about it, how you feel, how you're going to process through it. And I think for this, there's definitely no rush. I mean, you could process your trauma in 2 weeks, you could process it in 2 months, you could process it in 2 years or in 20 years. There is definitely no rush for you to process what trauma you have gone through. And, you know, it's definitely, it's not a race. You definitely have to go through it in your own time whenever you feel like you're ready to talk about it. But I think what's most important is that, you know, you can never stop healing. And that's something we have to acknowledge if we went through something traumatic. And that there is a space for you in this world to heal. And there are ways that you can go to for your healing process. And that's something that I think is that we need to kind of stress on. And it's a really important step, and not a lot of people talk about it, but it is a reality of a lot of people that they have to go through when they go through something traumatic. Yeah, so to kind of just wrap this all up, we kind of really went through a lot of things here in today's episode. So we hope you guys are taking a breather and kind of really understanding, you know, the depth, the gravity of just how important this topic is. And, you know, while it's great to analyze Taylor Swift and all her artwork, all her beauty and creations, this is a side of Taylor that we saw that she opened up to the world, and, you know, through a song, a short film that we did analyze, and we analyzed her relationship. And, you know, I think a bit, it kind of just shows that even if you're, you know, Miss Taylor yourself, like, trauma doesn't choose a person. Trauma doesn't choose its victims. So we really do resonate with you if you're going through a difficult time. We hope and urge you to seek the professional help and to get some help that you need and find a healthy way to cope with that. Yeah, so to kind of just summarize all the points that we did talk about for today, we dissected Taylor Swift 10 minutes version of All Too Well, and we kind of really spotted the little nitty-gritty themes of abuse, the gaslighting, and how that showed in the music video in manifestations through her relationship with Jake, her ex, her past relationship. And to kind of just, again, this is again a reminder for everyone that you can always find someone to talk to if you are going through something. You know, just to kind of process that thing as well, and that know that you're not alone and you're not solo in processing your emotions, your trauma, or whatever that may be. And there are always people who can listen to you, who are willing to listen to you. Maybe some tips would be like journaling. I personally love journaling. Maybe some reflection or counseling. And Ateneo does actually offer counseling for free if you just go through LSOGC. So that's also something that you could delve into. But I think to kind of close this thing off, Bits, maybe you have some last words.
I just want to reiterate, because, you know, I guess you can never repeat it too much. Just remember, if you're dealing with intense feelings and potential trauma, like, seek help, like what Roby's been saying. Talk to a friend or a counselor. But if you're not ready to take that step, or if you're not ready to talk to anyone yet, you could try journaling about it, and, like, just getting all the ugly emotions out there and get it all, like, written down in front of you on a page. Because I found, like, that's really helped me.
Definitely. Yeah. So, again, there is no clear timeline for how you heal, a process for how you heal. And it's not a race. And if journaling doesn't work for you, I mean, there are other ways that you could process it. You could search online. I mean, online resources is just, it's a huge help nowadays. So you could definitely delve into Google and see how else you could healthily process your emotions. But again, I think that's just a huge thing that we wanted to emphasize with today's episode. It is quite heavy. So we hope that you, for our listeners out there, you did get some insights from our conversation. It is something, it is a conversation that needs to be talked about more. And we hope that, you know, you processed it with us. And if you have, you know, more thoughts, don't be afraid to kind of speak it to the world and let it all out, definitely. But I think with that, to kind of just close this thing off, I suggest you go ahead and listen to Taylor Swift, All Too Well's 10-minute version. Yeah. Scream the lyrics. Scream it. Shout it out in your room, in the car. It's definitely, definitely needed. And if you're not going through it, you know, you can just sing the lyrics because yeah, it's a pretty damn good song.
It is.
All right. With that, guys, I think we'll see you on the next one. This has been Roby.
And Bits.
And see you guys next time on Magis Radio for the sound. The Breaking Point, Identifying Abuse in Taylor Swift's All Too Well, is a production of Magis Radio, which was written by Jerome Agbalza and edited by Thomas Bersanira. Remember to keep it Magis, follow the sound.